The field is set, Sean. 16 teams are in. The Dallas Stars, maybe not the way they wanted to get in, but they're in. And the matchups, we only know two of them right now as we record this on Thursday afternoon, but those will be set by Friday night. It's playoff time in the NHL, Sean.
I'm already growing the beard, buddy. I'm ready.
There you go.
Can't wait. The weather's turning a little bit nice. Everybody's getting excited. If you're in, if you're out, it's the worst time of year. But if you're in, it's the best time of year. And for us, it's the best time of year because we're in every year.
That's right. We go four rounds every year, no matter what. We raise the state. Well, we watch the Stanley Cup get raised every year. And look, we got a great show here. We got a great guest, EJ Erratic, my nemesis on NHL Network. He'll be joining us. We got a lot in that discussion with EJ. But so, Sean, we don't know all the matchups. Right now, we know two. They're both in the West. We don't even know who at this point who has home ice advantage in the St. Louis, Minnesota one. But we know Edmonton, LA as well. So let's just start there with what we know. All right. And I think the St. Louis, Minnesota matchup is a fascinating matchup. And I think you might be the one that's going out there to cover that for NHL.com. That might be the best first round series. I can't believe that nobody jumped on that series and you got it. You know, I'll give you that. I'll give it. All right. You got it. You're lucky there. It's a good travel matchup too. Two good cities. It's a great matchup, Sean.
I went last.
I know you went last and nobody jumped on it. It's pretty wild. No pun intended, but this could be the best first round matchup that we see. And I say that because these two teams are snarly. They play hard. They're big physical teams. They've played three times this year. The Blues have won all three games, including in the Winter Classic, 6-4 at Target Field on that frigid night at Target Field. But you have two teams here that I am not 100% sure. I can guess, but I'm not 100% sure who's going to be the starting goalie for each team in game one.
I would assume for St. Louis, it's going to be Ville Husso.
Yeah, that would be my pick too.
You know, he's been the better goalie. Craig Berube has had no qualms about changing up his goalies. I mean, the whole legend of Binnington is that he came in almost unpopularly, right? Like it was desperate. Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to start this guy. He's been in the minors for years and we don't have a choice. And off they go and they win the Stanley Cup. So he's not afraid to switch things up and ride his number one too long. So I wouldn't be shocked there if the incumbent is not starting game one and it's Ville Husso. Minnesota, a lot tougher, right? Like, you know, we're going to talk a lot about goalies because goalies are so important. I was doing some preview work of the goalies in the Stanley Cup playoffs this year. Marc-Andre Fleury has 164 games played. Just won the cup three times, played in another final. The next goalie on that list is Braden Holtby with 97.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's 100 less for anybody else almost. Like, nobody's played in a ton of playoff games. But he might not even start. And he's only lost once since he's gone to Minnesota.
Yeah.
The other guy hasn't lost until this week, I think. Or maybe he still hasn't lost. But Cam Talbot.
Not in regulation. Hasn't lost in regulation since Fleury's gotten there.
Yeah, so Cam Talbot has certainly staked his claim. And it's kind of funny, isn't it, that it seems Marc-Andre always ends up in these goalie dramas, soap operas, whatever they are. You know, it happened in Vegas. It happened twice in Pittsburgh. So fortunately, he's a good teammate, and he's able to kind of roll with it in the moment, and it doesn't really affect them. And it's a huge luxury to have, you know, if Cam starts and doesn't play well, they can go to Marc-Andre and there's no drop off. So, but I have no idea who the game one starter is going to be there.
Yeah. And so since, as we record this Thursday, Fleury has gotten the last three starts, right? And they've been okay. They haven't been great. His numbers are, they each have 10 starts since Marc-Andre arrived there on March 21st in the trade. His numbers are not Talbot's got better numbers, a 923 save percentage and a 228 goals against. And Fleury in his 10 starts is a 905 and a 291. Take that for what it will. It depends on the night. Are you playing on a back-to-back? All these things, right? You got to take that a little bit, you know, and put it aside. My feeling on this, and I don't know where Dean Evason goes with this, the Wild coach, but I also think you have to look at who's the goalie who can handle it best if he doesn't start, right? And if I need to go to him, And unfortunately, in the position he's in, I think Marc-Andre Fleury is that guy. And that's not disrespecting Cam Talbot in any way and how he can be, you know, handles himself as a professional. But we've seen it from Marc-Andre Fleury. He's done it. He's dealt with this stuff. So I think if you go with Talbot in game one and you have to turn to Fleury by game two or game three, you're going to get a goalie in Marc-Andre Fleury who understands the situation, is not going to, maybe he'll be upset that he doesn't start, but is never going to, you know, voice it or any of those issues or do, he's dealt with this before. And I think that might be the way to go because you got a guy in Talbot who is playing well. He's been pushed by Fleury, pushed hard, and he's played well because of it. And a guy in Fleury who's played well and understands the situation that he's in. I kind of think you get Talbot in game one.
Maybe. And I just thought of this. Maybe it's as simple as where they play.
Could be.
Maybe Talbot starts game one if they win home ice, and maybe Fleury starts game one if they go to St. Louis, because again, Fleury has that experience of playing in nasty buildings. And St. Louis is a nasty building in the playoffs. Yeah. It's a tough place to go in and play. I mean, ask the Boston Bruins, you know, ask anybody in that run who played against them. When the Blues get rolling, they get in on their forecheck and they get some momentum going. That's a madhouse. And it takes a special player to, especially in goal, to say, not going to affect me. And Marc-Andre's that player. You know, he'll talk to his posts. He'll laugh. He'll pull a prank in the middle of the game. Like, he don't care. And maybe it's as simple as that. Like, I need this guy because we're starting on the road. Yeah. Or I need this guy because, you know, we're home and he's been my guy all year and I'm going to reward him.
What's interesting to me, too, about this series, Sean, the Blues Wild, is that they've played three times this season, and those games have averaged more than 9 goals per game, right? It's a total of 28 goals that they've scored. Now, one of those games was a 6-4 game outside in the cold, but again, the same two teams that were playing. And, you know, it kind of goes along with the lines of what's happened in the NHL this season, where scoring has been up and whatnot. But I don't think you're going to see those types of games. It's been 4-3, 6-4, 6-5, two overtime games. You may get overtime games, but I don't think you're going to see scoring like you're seeing scoring. Like those three regular season games that the Wild and Blues have played, I don't think you're getting close to 9 goals per game in this series.
Why not? I think you are. Like, first of all, I love Minnesota's defense. Like, I think Brodin is completely underrated as a shutdown defenseman. I think that Spurgeon's completely underrated as a defenseman. I think he's elite. You know, hopefully he's healthy. Hopefully Dumba's healthy. They've both been out the last couple of games. But as deep as Minnesota's defense goes, how do you game plan against the Blues? They have 8-20 goal scorers. They might get to 9 before the end of the regular season if Ryan O'Reilly can get there. 2005-06 Detroit Red Wings are the last team to have that many 20 goal scorers. Like, how does Dean Evason figure out, hey, here's how I'm going to do it. Okay, I know how I'm going to shut down the Tarasenko line. Okay. What are you going to do next? Okay, I figured out how to shut down the second line. Third line's got 60 goals. Like, how do you, and then nobody shuts down Minnesota's first line. Even with the defense the Blues have and with Ryan O'Reilly as a really good defensive center, are you betting that first line can't get 3 points a game?
I'm betting that the defensive play, the grind that these two teams are going to have to put in, the forecheck, the aggressiveness, the physicality is going to lead to more of like a 3-2 type games. And the great 3-2 games, you know, like great hockey games, just not as high scoring. Would I love to see 9-10 goals per game in this series? Absolutely. Who doesn't want to see that, right? With the same style of play, but more goals. I just think we're going to see more along the lines of those 3-2 games. But I also, in big picture, I think we'll see a little bit more of that in the playoffs than we have in the regular season to begin with. So we always do. Maybe the scoring will be up a little bit in the playoffs this year from years past, but I don't think it's going to be at the level it was at in the regular season, which is well over 6 a game. And in this series in particular, you're right. There's a lot of guys who can score, but there's also a lot of guys on both of these teams that play really good, you know, in their own end, in shutdown roles and winning faceoffs to do those things. So I think it'll kind of even out in that sense.
You know what I'm really looking forward to in this series?
No.
Like you said, there's going to be lots of overtimes, and there's probably going to be the 8:30 local start.
Oh, you're 8:45. That's an 8:45 local time start if you think at 8:30. Yeah, you're really loving that, aren't you?
A lot of overtimes, a lot of late starts. Yep. It'll be a good time.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Travel's not that bad.
All in one time zone.
Travel is not that great for the other series that we know about, which is LA and Edmonton. But that's not our worry. That's another series. To me, that one's also fascinating. It's not as fascinating as the Wild and the Blues, but you've got a team in Edmonton that has played really well of late, but you got a team in LA. EJ is going to touch on this when we talk to him, EJ Raddick from the NHL Network, who just, they win the game. They win, right? I mean, as we speak now, they've won five in a row. Now, granted, it's against teams that will put up, and I put bubble quotes around, like inferior opponents, right? Anaheim twice, Columbus, Chicago, Seattle. But these are games that the LA Kings had to win. And what did they do? They go out, win them all, right? And Jonathan Quick has got that. He's got that playoff savvy. He's got that know-how. 10 years ago, it was Quick and Mike Smith in the Western Conference Final, Arizona and LA. 10 years later, in the first round, Mike Smith in Edmonton, Jonathan Quick in LA. You got McDavid and Draisaitl, but you got Kopitar and Dano. This is an interesting series. And one team in LA who's probably playing with a little bit of house money. I think they're about a year ahead of schedule, whereas another team in Edmonton who's got the pressure on it.
Huge amounts of pressure.
Huge. Yeah.
I mean, how many times are they going to end the play? Look, they're the favorite, right, in this series.
They're a clear favorite in this series.
Were they favored last year?
I don't even remember last
year. Were they favored the year before? The answer is yes.
Yes. Yes. They usually are.
And they don't deliver. And they haven't delivered. And that's got to be petrifying, especially when you play against a team that's motivated, right, to knock you off. A team that has some core pieces of a championship team, of which you've never done under this iteration of the Edmonton Oilers, a team that knows how to really clamp down a game. But then on the other end, you know, you have Connor McDavid, who I think has 63 points in his last 31 games. Like, something ridiculous. His career year, right? How do we even talk about Connor McDavid anymore? You know, he's so good. And I've said this a number of times, he's the best player in the league. There's no argument about it to me that he's clearly the best player in the league. I don't know that he's the most valuable, and we've had that discussion. Mm-hmm. But this is where he has to prove it right now. And Tim Campbell, our Edmonton correspondent, is going to have a piece that comes out over the weekend about how Connor McDavid understands now that he needs to prove it. And he maybe needs to change his game a little bit. You know, Jay Woodcroft said last week that, you know, Connor and Leon have really driven the success they've had because they've been more engaged, and they've played more of the ice, and they've played more of a 200-foot game than they ever have. And that's what it's going to take. And Connor McDavid needs this. He needs to advance.
Yes, he needs to advance. The other thing about the Edmonton Oilers is they've got a guy in Evander Kane who's on a 40-goal pace if you were to play the whole season. And his scoring has really, I mean, really taken, allowed Connor McDavid even, you know, more room, if you will. You know, that extra impact scoring has, in a way, made Draisaitl and McDavid even more dangerous. We were waiting for that, right? And it makes them even more of a threat in the playoffs, because now you don't just have to worry about those. You have to worry about those two, but there's other guys that you have to concern yourself with. But the other storyline in this series, and it's a great one, is it's Todd McLellan, coaching the coach of the Kings, former coach of the Edmonton Oilers, versus Jay Woodcroft, now the coach of the Oilers, teacher versus pupil, right? I mean, Woodcroft was the guy who was an assistant under McLellan in San Jose and whatnot, and now they're coaching against each other. So that's a little other fascinating storyline in this series. But if you're McLellan too, you kind of have an idea on the Oilers now and the way Woodcroft coaches, and maybe that helps you out. But flip it around, Woodcroft knows how McLellan coaches. He kind of knows what to expect there too. So that's a little fascinating subplot to this series.
It is, but playoffs are different, right? And again, coaching in the playoffs gives you something that not coaching in the playoffs you could never have. You don't know what the pressure is going to be like. I mean, look, I think Jay has an idea because he walked into the Titanic and somehow he salvaged it and got it into port. But now it's been retrofitted and he's got to get it across the Atlantic. And
that was fantastic, by the way.
Thank you. That was pretty good.
That was really good. Continue with your thought, but that was fantastic.
Yeah. Can he do it? And you know, we'll see for sure. I just think, you know, Todd's got way more experience, might be better at matchups. I think he's got the better goalie. You know, it's not as decided as it once was earlier in the year when they couldn't find any goaltender. Mike Smith's been really good, but I don't know, even a series, right, of playing every other day. I'd like to see him get across the finish line. And then the other thing, and it would be more noticeable if Drew Doughty were playing, and it's horrible that he's not because he lives for it. Does Edmonton's defense scare you at all?
No, but I don't.
Especially know that, if Donald Nurse isn't healthy.
But I don't know that LA's offense scares me that much either.
So. No, it doesn't. It's a pop gun offense, but yeah. You know, if they can control Connor and Leon, and you know, everybody says, well, can they control them? They've been controlled in the playoffs in the past.
Yeah.
Like that's part of the problem. And once you take those two guys out, what's left? And you're right, Evander Kane changes that narrative a little bit, but it's not the most awe-inspiring defense I've ever seen. And can it be exploited? I think so.
By the way, Leon Draisaitl in what is four games against the Kings this season, one goal, one assist, 2 points in four games. That's below bar. McDavid's got 6 points, 3-3, which is about average for him, you know, in terms of production. Last thing before we get to our interview with EJ Raddick from the NHL Network, I got a question in the mailbag this week, Colorado Avalanche. And it was, am I worried about the Colorado Avalanche that they might be heading down the path of the Tampa Bay Lightning from a few years ago, right? With a great regular season, but not a great finish, and some injuries that they had to deal with late in the season. That year, Victor Hedman had the concussion, missed the last four games. They go in against Columbus and they get swept, right? Is this a concern? And I think I actually thought about that, Sean, as the Avalanche were losing four in a row. They didn't have a historic regular season on a national scale the way the Lightning did that year. But I did think about that, you know, great regular season, injuries starting to creep up, Landeskog, Rantanen, Ryan Murray's been out, Devon Taves was out back now. We hope that Landeskog's going to be back. But I don't think it's necessarily the same. I don't think we were concerned necessarily about it. Tampa Bay. It's hindsight is what it is, right? In that year, we were kind of thinking Tampa Bay was going to roll Columbus. In fact, in that first period of game one, they were up 3-0. And it was like, okay, this series is over. Far from it, obviously. But do you have any level of concern about the Avalanche based on how they've played lately? And understanding that a 5-3 win against the St. Louis Blues just happened, where they ended the Blues 16-game point streak.
No, I don't have any concern because, A, who wants to win the President's Trophy? Nobody. Right.
That's the other thing, too.
Right? Nobody. You win the President's Trophy, you never win the Stanley Cup, right? Which one would you rather have? So I don't know that there was a lot to play for. You know, you don't flip the switch on, but you can flip it off, I think. And I think it might have been flipped off a little bit. And that's, I think that's natural, right? You don't have anything to play for. There's no juice. You're late in the season. You need something to bring the juice. And I don't know that there was anything. And I think the two other differences are Victor Hedman was hurt in that Tampa Bay series. And he's the fulcrum for them. So that was huge. Like, I don't know that there's a more valuable player. Like, Tampa Bay has survived other injuries in their runs to the Stanley Cup championship, but it wasn't Hedman. Like, he's the guy that drives the whole thing to me. And they have their guys that drive it, and they're relatively healthy. And the other thing is they've already had their teeth kicked in, right? For Tampa, it was getting your teeth kicked in and saying, oh, now I've learned my lesson. Now I'm going to go out and I'm going to play. And I understand that from game one, period two, because period one they did win, you know, I can never let up on the gas pedal. Colorado's already learned that twice. Yeah. So I'm not concerned at all. There's got to be this quasi rage within their room to come out and just pummel people, and just to get the noise to stop. Everybody shut up. We're good. And now we're going to prove it. And I'm sorry you're in our way. This isn't even going to be a contest. And I think that's the mindset they have to have. And I don't know that that was the mindset that the Tampa Bay Lightning had that year, because they were so good and they were so unchallenged and they didn't know any better. They were young and they were cocky and they thought it was all going to come, and it didn't.
Yeah. And they lost their composure too, you know, and that's, I think, the one thing that Colorado's got to guard against is being almost too amped up to where if it doesn't go your way early, you stay composed. You have to stay with it. Tampa Bay couldn't do that in that year. Now, since then, they haven't lost the playoff round, right? Yeah. I mean, so they figured it out.
Well, if Colorado doesn't know that now,
they should. Yeah.
After 2 years of this core and longer than that for some of these guys, like, you know, guys like Landeskog and McKinnon basically saying, this is embarrassing. Like, we haven't done anything in our careers, because all that matters is that you win in the playoffs. If they can't keep their control now, when they know the consequences, when they know what's at stake, then it's a bigger problem than we've been led to believe.
Yep. No, I agree with that. So we'll see. I mean, they're another fascinating team to watch as the playoffs come around. All right, we teased it enough. EJ Raddick from the NHL Network joined us. We talked about a lot of different topics, including the Vegas Golden Knights, who are out of the playoffs, surprisingly, not surprisingly. We'll get into that. Here's that interview with EJ. All right, EJ, my nemesis, the Super 16 nemesis on NHL Network. We have welcomed you into the podcast. Thank you for joining us. Are you going to take it easy on me today?
Yeah, probably. I mean, you know, I mean, you're balanced out here. I mean, your ineptitude is balanced out by Sean's brilliance. So, I mean, I think we'll be fine. And thank you for I think this is my second go round. So I'm really, thank you.
Yes. And I was going to say to Dan that we had the power now and we could gang up on you, but after your kind words, Dan's screwed.
Yeah, I'm done.
I've switched sides.
There you go. There you go.
All right. Well, that's great. All right. Let's begin with my ineptitude. All right. Well, or I'm not going to be so cruel and say the Vegas Golden Knights ineptitude, but they did not make the playoffs. And I wanted to start there with you, EJ. Look, I mean, this is obviously surprising. Pete DeBoer said it last night. Surprised, disappointed. He put himself first line of responsibility. Max Pacioretty said there's no excuse. But I mean, let's be honest here. They kind of do have an excuse, don't they? I mean, all these injuries that they dealt with, you take all the good players out of your lineup almost all at once, or at least the top end players out of your lineup, almost a lot of them at one time. It's not necessarily surprising to me that the Vegas Golden Knights are in the position they're in right now.
No, I mean, I think that's fair. I can, you know, as you look through the whole season, I mean, there were stretches early in the year where I can remember one road trip into Eastern Canada and all kinds of guys out of the lineup for them. And they've had that throughout the season with some really important players on their team. But, you know, it's interesting because guys out of the lineup allowed them to maybe add a pretty big fish that if everybody had been healthy, it would have been really difficult for them maybe to do. So it's been a year of chaos for the Vegas Golden Knights. And, you know, the injuries, the bringing in of Jack Eichel was a big deal. I mean, if you're a fan of the Vegas Golden Knights, I mean, you got to love that Bill Foley and that management group are willing to really push the envelope and do whatever they think they need to do to bring in good players. But it got, I think, beyond the pale a little bit this year. And you put that together with injuries. You had that kind of crazy Dadonov trade that was and wasn't, and goaltending issues, and now kind of an ongoing situation. Robin Lehner, who's having surgery, but the way it all kind of unfolded over the last 10 days was kind of strange. And I just think, guys, for me, and I know that Vegas, they have never practiced patience. It's not been their MO, but I think this is really the time. I felt like this year as it unfolded was just not going to be their year. We've seen it happen before with teams that we thought were going to do well, and the fates conspired a little bit against them, and some of their own doing as well. And we've seen it in all sports. And I think for Vegas, they got a lot of really good pieces. I think now is the time to sort out those pieces, to see what they need to do cap-wise, figure out their goaltending situation and try to move forward. I don't think it's a time to break things up or fire a lot of people. I think really it's time to be patient and to sort through all those really good pieces and then have a full group moving forward, a full training camp for Jack Eichel and everyone else, and go from there. I think it's got the makings of really a very good team still, but we will see what they decide to do.
CJ, I lied already because I don't agree. Look, you can sort, you can say injuries all you want, and they were horrific.
Yeah.
But this is a team that was one game over 500 since January 1st,
yeah,
with stars in their lineup every day. This is a team who had fate in their hands and let it slip. If they don't lose to San Jose, this is a different story. We're still probably playing today and saying who's going to win. If they don't lose to the New Jersey Devils, who couldn't beat the Detroit Red Wings last week and had 12 shots on goal late in the third period, we're talking about a different story. They couldn't win the games they needed to win, and that's been a hallmark of the Golden Knights throughout their existence. Is if they needed to win a big game, they would win a big game. And they couldn't win a small game late in the year. And to me, that speaks to chemistry. And you know, to be patient is one thing. This is a team that's $10 million over the cap, that's alienated its number one goalie with what happened this week, and that has half of its cap tied up in five players who are nowhere close to being at the end of their deals. They can't shed any of that money. I don't know if I'm their front office, if I'm advocating patience.
Well, when I say patience, though, I mean, like, you're right, you said it. They're not going to be able to shed some of these deals, right, that they have. I think these players, for the most part, are good players that have a lot to offer still. And I just think the pieces are there. Do they have to move some people out? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they have to make some decisions about guys who are free agents or potential free agents down the road. Yeah, I mean, they have to absolutely do that. So those are some things they have to do because you can't operate over the cap. I mean, do they have to figure out what they want to do with Robin Leonard? Yeah, there's no question. So they have they have decisions to make. But my feeling is, well, are they going to fire Kelly McCrimmon? Are they going to fire Peter DeBoer? Are they going to, like, try to move all, you know, really just turn this roster over completely? I just don't see how that makes any sense for them either. So I just think they need to take a patient approach in evaluating what happened, evaluating where they're at, and then making the decisions they can make. And, you know, you're right. Yeah, they didn't win games that, you know, they needed to win down the stretch. There's no question about it. But, you know, when you look at it again, in March, they were missing, you know, several key guys. They got Stone back late. You know, Eichel came in February, played well, but he didn't really play to the standard that we think Jack Eichel can play to. So, like I said, I just think of a fresh training camp and kind of try to alleviate these cap circumstances as best you can and go forward the group like that. But you're right. There's a lot of questions, and it wasn't a good finish. But, you know, there are a lot of teams. You know, you look through this league, right? I mean, Vancouver made a great push, you know, and they come up a little bit short. They lost to Detroit at home 1-0 earlier in the year. They lost to Buffalo in overtime. I could go through the Vancouver schedule with you and point out losses they had. There's losses that all these teams have that didn't make it that they regret. And I just think it was one of those years where Vegas, where it just wasn't going to happen for them.
You know, and EJ, I don't want to belabor the point on Vegas, but I do. It's interesting that you say, I think they should preach patience. My question is, will they?
There's no history to tell us that they will.
Right. That's exactly the point. Yeah. So I don't know that they will. And I don't, you know, I don't know that Pete DeBoer's back. I don't know that Kelly McCrimmon's back. I don't know. There's a lot of questions. They're a fascinating team right now because expectations were so high. We went into the season saying it's Vegas in the Pacific Division, and then we'll see what happens after that.
Yep.
Everybody was saying that. I don't know anybody that didn't say that, you know?
Yep.
And now, because of where they are, and look, I can go through it, right? You know, I mean, Alec Martinez missed a bunch of games, 53 games. You know, Riley Smith, 24. Patch Reddy only played in 38. Stone only played in 36. But does any of that matter to an owner who was so close to tasting the Stanley Cup in his first year, and that raised expectations so high that now it's Stanley Cup or bust every year for a team that's still brand new in the league?
Yeah, it's... I mean, they, like, there are some challenges. There's no question. But, you know, I guess I look at that history of the team and, you know, they've been, you know, they've been over aggressive to the point of, you know, getting themselves in this cap issue. Now, you know, in the run up to the pandemic, I mean, there was no way to know that we were going to be in the situation we're in. So deals signed prior to that are tricky to look back on and say, hey, they shouldn't have done this or they shouldn't have done that. Now, going out and getting Eichel this year, I mean, that's, you know, that was a big fish to get. But I think we could probably all agree, like, you know, when you look at their team, they needed a number one center. They really didn't have that. So they put him in place. I just think they've got to shuffle the deck. And some of those guys, you know, one or two of those guys have to be out of there. They just have to figure that stuff out. That's what I mean when I say evaluate and try to just be patient and be smart with what you have and try to make it work that way. One of the problems, too, that they have is by trading all these draft picks over the years and really going for it all the time, they're really, like, you need those younger players on entry-level contracts in the mix for your team to kind of settle out your cap, right? I mean, and they don't have those guys. I mean, they've traded away just about every high draft pick they've ever had. So, I mean, that's going to be something going forward they're going to have to figure out. The good news is, you know, they got to look at some players this year. And, you know, I don't know how you guys feel, but watching Logan Thompson, I thought he played really well. Now, if he's a guy that can come in there and be a player that's on their team moving forward as a 1B or a number two guy, at he's making around $800,000 a year, that's a great thing for them. So they did get to see some players like that, and they've got to figure out which ones of those guys they can use on a regular basis. Because, you know, another problem they have, they can't keep every year going into games at different parts of the season with 16 forwards or four, you know, or five defensemen. I think one game they played four defensemen, I think they had in the lineup. So those are problems that they have to sift through. So I, you know, when I say patience, I guess what I mean is it's different than what I would normally expect, Sean, from them, which has been just kind of just, you know, rip and roll, and, you know, guys are in, guys are out. And I think that's been part of their problem, too, is they had such an unbelievable first year and a huge chemistry. And now I think they've gotten a reputation of, hey, you know, amongst players is that, you know, they treat you great on the way in, but don't get too comfortable because you could be on the way out pretty quick as well.
Yeah. And to me, the most amazing thing out of all this is that they missed the playoffs and how much the rest of the NHL has reveled in it. Like, they're the evil empire now. They're the New York Yankees of the NHL. I mean, every single fan base, except for Vegas, is happy that they're not in the playoffs. And I've never seen it in my entire time covering hockey where so many other fan bases are united against one team. Sure, people in the East might not like the Montreal Canadiens or the Boston Bruins because they play all the time, but this has been almost universal. And I don't really know where it comes from.
I think it probably goes back right to the expansion draft of, like, there was teams and I'm sure there were fan bases that felt like, you know, boy, these guys are getting really favorable rules. And then they used the rules to their advantage, as they should. And they made quite a few really good deals that cost various franchises around the league good players. And then they made the finals the first year. And I think there were some people that looked at it and were like, wow, what an unbelievable sports story. And then there were others who were like, you know, they didn't really like the fact that, like, why should this franchise get in their first year? I mean, we're a long struggling franchise here and, you know, X, Y, or Z. And, you know, we're not digging it so much. And then as time has gone on, you know, they've been this ultra aggressive team with adding pieces. So, you know, I think you're right. I think there's absolutely there was absolutely a feeling of, you know, hey, we'd love to see these guys on the other side of it. But, you know, that's all part of, you know, any great story, right? Any great book, any great movie and sports. It's you know, it's a reality show that we watch on a daily basis. Is there's heroes and villains and people we root for and people we don't. And I think in Vegas, they're happy to wear that hat for now. And, you know, over time that might change, but there's no question. The aggressive nature and the quick success were something that probably irritated people in the other now 31 markets.
Yeah, no question. All right. So we have successfully crushed Vegas. We'll move on. I wanted to go to a different topic with you. So one of the fun things you can do at this time of year, because we know all 16 teams in the playoffs, CJ, is kind of go like, all right, who's the underdog that might have a shot, right? Or we see it all the time. Like Dallas did it, you know, a few years ago, LA, obviously. So is there a team from your estimation that's in that, would be in that pure underdog role in their first round series, at least? And I'm thinking like Nashville and Dallas would be there, Pittsburgh, probably Washington. I don't know that you could say Tampa Bay, probably not St. Louis or Minnesota, whoever finishes there. LA maybe in that sense because of the way Edmonton's playing. But is there a team there that you're saying to yourself, watch out for that particular team, because you know what? That might be the team that we don't see coming that makes that run that you know, we'll look back on and say, hey, it happens a lot, you know, that they're doing it again. Is there a team like that?
Yeah, I don't know, because I think there's a lot of teams that really, if things go their way, can win. So, you know, like I think of the teams that are purely like, you know, kind of at the bottom of my 16 playoff teams. I mean, I like Dallas's team on paper, and I've liked them since the start of the year on paper. And but in reality, they've had an unbelievable first line. And I think the number is they've scored 46% of all their goals this year with Robertson, Hintz, and Pavelski. Mm-hmm. You know, that is just too lopsided. So now we're in the playoffs. It's a fresh start. Could Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin and Radulov and some of the others really kind of find their way and have a good playoff run? Sure. I mean, we've seen that many, many times. I like their group of defense. I really like Haskinen. Klingberg's a really good offensive player. Suter's been okay. Lindell is solid. I mean, and then Jake Ottinger has really found his way. I mean, he was the difference in the game against Vegas on Tuesday night. He was just terrific, especially down the stretch in overtime and in the shootout. He was rock solid. So, you know, on paper, I've liked their group, but then you watch them play and it seems like they play just barely good enough to win or lose. I mean, it's been, I would imagine being a Stars fan is probably a little bit mind numbing this year, but you know, that's a team that, you know, again, I like them on paper and they've had success against some of the better teams. So, you know, could they go on a little bit of a run and surprise? I guess. I mean, LA is kind of a clear underdog, right? Especially with Doughty not being in the picture for them, but all they do is find ways to win, and everybody kind of assumes that they're going to get beaten, and yet they find ways to win, and they're really strong in the middle with Kopitar and Deneau. It's really, that's going to be a fascinating first round matchup against Edmonton, just for that matchup of the centers, right? Because Kopitar and Deneau are really good 200-foot players, and you know, against McDavid and Draisaitl, that'll be interesting. The two teams played a couple games down the stretch and they were close. I think LA lost in a shootout in Edmonton, and then LA lost the one goal game at home, but I would suspect that, you know, people are gonna write them off a little bit. I wouldn't necessarily pick them in that series, but you know, again, that's the kind of underdog team you're looking for. Everybody else, I mean, like, you know, Colorado, everybody thinks is going to win. Big Minnesota and St. Louis are going to be a hell of a series. You know, I really like the way Tampa's finishing the season. Florida's had an unbelievable year. They've had a little stumble at the very end here. We'll see what that looks like for them. So there's a lot of teams. I mean, the Rangers with Shesterkin, and that's a team that I think has gotten better throughout the whole season. Carolina, they got to figure out the goaltending situation there, who's going to be the guy, although I like Kochetkov from what I've heard about his time in the American League and in the KHL and what we've seen so far. If they had to throw him in, I mean, that would be kind of a monkey wrench for Carolina, but he's a very highly thought of young player. So I think there's a lot of teams. I mean, this more than any other year, I think there's a lot of teams that probably think they can win.
For me, the clear underdog until 2 days ago that I would put money on, go to Vegas and drop a few dimes if I could, was Nashville.
Yeah.
And now with UC Soros being hurt, that takes some big
problem.
But
yeah. Cause you know, Sean, they don't have like Carolina has this interesting circumstance of having this kid Kochetkov, who they really like and played in the American League. And he's kind of had a similar path, although younger than Shesterkin. Like Shesterkin came over, played in Hartford, lit it up, went to the Rangers and basically, you know, kind of pushed Henrik Lundqvist into retirement. And Kochetkov, 13-1-1 in Chicago in the American League, 921 save percentage, has come in, and he hasn't had to do a ton in these first three games that he's participated in, but he's got three wins, and he went into Madison Square Garden and his team played well in front of him and they won. Nashville doesn't have that guy. I mean, they have David Riddick, and you know, it starts to really fall off from there. So, and we know, you guys know, you know, really well that Staros has been so good over the last, you know, maybe last 14 months on the calendar. I mean, middle of the season last year and then all this year, he's been lights out good, and they really lean on him. So that's a huge loss, Sean. I agree with you, because I like their team, but I just don't see them going anywhere without Staros.
But, and they don't play the way Carolina does in front of their goalie either. You know, that's the other thing. Carolina's going to win the Jennings, right? And part of that is because of the way Carolina plays in front of the goalie. And as good as that's been, but I mean, Sean, I agree with you though. Like, you know, Nashville would have been that team that I would have said, you know, can, because they can play all different types of ways, you know, if they have the goaltending, they can play all different types of ways, and maybe he's going to be fine. We'll see. I mean, that's that goaltending alone is a storyline unto itself, because I mean, EJ, look at it, right? I was going through the list of the 16 playoff teams and I counted five, maybe six teams where I'm like, yeah, I trust that goaltending, no matter, that's going to be fine. And two of those teams were St. Louis and Minnesota, regardless of who they play, whether it's Husso and Binnington or Talbot and Fleury. But beyond that, I mean, there's so many question marks about goaltending. I can't remember a time where there were this many question marks about goaltending for this many teams going into the playoffs.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. And it's, I guess, one of the reasons why goals are up this year, that the goaltending has been more inconsistent. We added a team, and then we've had, you know, for different reasons, whether it be injuries, whether it be, you know, COVID issues for different teams over the course of the years. But I think we've played more goalies this year. The number at one point recently was 116. I would imagine there's been a few more additions to that since, you know, that number, but that's a lot of goalies. I mean, the Devils played, I think, what, seven goalies this year? And, you know, there's been a couple of teams that have had those kind of problems. And, yeah, it's been inconsistent. So the teams, you know, obviously like Tampa Bay, it's a huge advantage. They have a rock-solid guy in there that's won back-to-back cups and has done nothing but have success in this league really since he got here. You know, the Rangers seem to have one of those guys in Shesterkin. And, you know, as you mentioned, Minnesota's got the duo of Talbot and Fleury. St. Louis, Husso's been great this year, and Binnington has played better of late, so you feel better about him. You know, Jonathan Quick is an oldie but a goodie, right? He's played very well, especially. He played well early, and then he had a little slide, and I think he's played well, you know, over the last month to help push L.A. into that spot. Mike Smith has kind of come out of nowhere, but I don't really know if I'm really banking on, you know, 40-year-old Mike Smith night after night after night in a 2-month grind. But, you know, and then Darcy Kemper has been, you know, really good. But, you know, in the playoffs, is there any kind of long track record there? So there's a number of situations. You're right. I mean, Boston, right, has been a team for years, you know, was Tuukka Rask for years. You never had to worry about it. Now it's two young guys in Swayman and Ullmark. So how are they going to? On how is it going to play out for them? And then we've had the injury, Saros injury, Anderson injury, Jari injury. So you put it all together, Dan, and I agree with you. There are a lot of question marks. And I think that's what's going to make it really interesting. And that's why I think a lot of teams see a path to winning the Stanley Cup this year. And, you know, I really will be interested in, you know, the first round is always critical, but this year I'm even more so, because you get a little run this year, your path might be different than it would have been in different seasons because of, you know, what we just talked about with the goaltending.
And part of that goaltending question, EJ, and I'm curious on your thoughts on this, is the Pittsburgh Penguins, right? Jari's hurt. Yeah. He's got, you know, some sort of foot injury, maybe a broken foot. We don't know. We don't know when he's going to come back. Casey DeSmith has no proven track record. The window's closing in Pittsburgh with their superstars, obviously, with Crosby, Letang, and Malkin. They haven't played well. I think in the last 3 weeks, they've won one game against a playoff caliber team. Are you nervous about what's going to happen with them in the playoffs?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if that's exactly the right word for me, because I mean, this is a team that's had a lot of success over many years. So, I mean, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. I mean, they won the back-to-back cups in 16 and 17, and you look at their playoffs since then. I mean, they haven't really gotten a sniff. I mean, they've barely won a game. Now, last year, I think if if Jari had played well or if they had had competent goaltending, they would have beat the Islanders in the first round. I thought they outplayed them. But it came down to the fact that they just couldn't rely on their goaltender to get a save when they needed it. They didn't have any alternative because Casey DeSmith was injured last year. And so really it was Jari or bust unless they were going to take a real chance on someone with no track record whatsoever. So, you know, they had to feel good about things. I mean, I really liked their team when you thought about them in January and February. I just thought, boy, they're running on all cylinders, and they've got these six defensemen who have played kind of together for a couple of months and didn't have to worry about injuries in that regard after having a start where they had a lot of people out. Crosby's been great, and, you know, they're getting, obviously get a lot of Gensel. Letang is maybe having the best year of his career. It's hard to say at this point of his career that's happening, but he's been terrific. And you know, they had Evan Rodriguez early in the year. He was just a great story and lighting it up, and he kind of really went cold. And you know, now here we sit here and there's no Jari. I mean, Casey DeSmith, I mean, could he go out and have a play well? I guess, but I don't think in the other locker room the teams are sitting there shivering in their boots about how are we going to beat Casey DeSmith. I mean, he's not a big goaltender. I don't think he has a real presence in there. He'll give you his best. And like I said, we've seen goalies get hot at other times and help a team through a round. But I can't imagine in the other dressing room, you're all that concerned that you're going to have trouble finding ways to score goals. So I think, you know, that's a real negative. And the Penguins have struggled down the stretch, and, you know, I don't like their chances just based on their recent history and where they're at right now. So yeah, I'd be nervous, you know, if I was a Penguins guy, because I don't like where they're at right now.
I would agree with that. So before we let you go, before we cut your mic, tables have turned here, by the way.
Yes, they have.
So you always want to cut mine when I'm on with you on the network. Yeah, so we'll cut yours eventually.
By the way, did you like the way I was able to start that music right on cue yesterday?
Yeah,
right. Doing our spot.
I'm at Madison Square Garden. The camera goes on, and boom, the place goes dark, and the music starts. It's like he just turned. It's like he turned it up from his studio in Secaucus. It was amazing, actually. Anyway, last one for you. I'm curious on this. What's your take on the Florida Panthers? Where do you sit with them right now?
Boy, they're such an interesting team, right? Because what an unbelievable season they had. I mean, I got a chance to call a bunch of games for the NHL Network this year, and we do our showcase games on Saturday afternoon. And one of the last game I think I did was the Panthers at the Rock to play the Devils. And it was a Saturday afternoon game. For 40 minutes, the Panthers looked like, I mean, that they had been out literally until game time and just showed up, put their equipment on, and jumped out there. I mean, they were awful. I mean, Gustav Forsling hit Jack Hughes with a pass right on his tape, right in the slot, and he went in and scored. And they just looked dreadful. And they were down 6-2 after two. And then in the third period, they start with a power play, and they don't score. They get another power play, and they don't score. And there's like about 14 minutes left in the game. And then they rattle off four goals, two with the net empty, to tie the game, and then they go on and win in overtime. So it's been that kind of year for the Panthers. I mean, they've had great performances from their top-end players. You know, Huberto is someone that's going to be in the mix for the Hart Trophy. What a year he's had this year. I mean, mid-80s in assists and just been terrific. And I love the way he's kind of led that team, too, physically when the games are kind of tough. I always point to a game they played early in the year against Calgary, and he was right in the battle. And I love that. And Barkov's a great player. And all the additions have been really good. Bill Zito, the GM there, it seems like he just hasn't made a wrong move in 2 years. Everybody he brings in there seems to play well. But all that said, you know, they're a team that they love chaos. They love kind of high-scoring games. I don't know how that works in the playoffs. You know, they're a team that, like, you know, last year we were excited. It was a great series with Tampa. But in the end, they didn't win a round, right? They won two games, and they used three goalies. I don't know what the status is of Aaron Ekblad. Boy, oh boy, they could use him back, you know, when you get into the postseason. So they put themselves in a position to have a better matchup in the first round than the Tampa Bay Lightning. So that's a plus. They got a lot of offense. And if they can dictate the game and play that kind of, you know, make teams play on their heels and back off, then they're going to continue to have success. But I think in the postseason, I'm worried that might not be sustainable. And I'm also worried that, you know, if they can't put up five in the game. I mean, are they going to be able to keep enough pucks out of their net? And will Bobrovsky step up to be the guy to make those stops when they need him in a big spot? So, I mean, it's been a great story this year. I could easily see them going on a run. They've got a really strong team. But, you know, I'd love to see Ekblad back for them. And I think they're kind of another mystery, you know, as we move into the postseason. And I would love at some point to see them get into another matchup with Tampa. But I guess there's a lot to happen before that could go on. That Florida rivalry is alive and well. They play some nasty, fun games.
Well, EJ, thanks for joining us. I really appreciate it. And for those who don't watch, it's much watched viewing when Dan comes on to do the Super 16.
Right, yes.
It's back and forth. It's nasty at times. It's like a good playoff series between Dan and EJ.
That's right. That's so, right. There's a lot of chippiness, but we like it that way.
Yeah. So tune in. when you're done listening to Dan and I on the podcast, make sure you tune in each week to EJ and Dan for the Super 16 and the network at all the time with EJ.
That's
He's
right.
on almost every day. He's omnipresent.
That's right. I'm on, whether you like it or not, I'm there. And I know Dan doesn't like it at all, but regardless.
I like it all the time, except when I'm on with you. So, but anyway, I love it when I'm on with you. It's a lot of fun. Ej, thanks so much
it's fun.
We have fun with it. Thanks so much for jumping on with us. All right.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
Good discussion there with Ej, Sean. And I wanted to play right off of what we were talking about there with the Florida Panthers. And the reason I asked them the question is because I wanted to get into the discussion with you as well. If there's a favored team, that I'm worried about, or I might even pick against in the first round, depending on the matchup, it's the Florida Panthers. Look, if they end up playing the Pittsburgh Penguins in the first round, I'm not sure I can pick Pittsburgh. And for some of the reasons that you guys were just talking about, right? But if they end up playing the Washington Capitals, I might pick against the Florida Panthers. I don't necessarily trust them. Like, just in their last six games, they've given up 26 goals. All right. In their last five games against teams in the playoffs, they've given up 21 goals. And that's Boston, Tampa, Toronto, Nashville, and Toronto again. They trail after the second period a lot. They've been trailing a lot. 27 times this season, they've trailed after the second, going into the third period. And only five teams in the playoffs have done that, you know, more times. I worry about them in their defense and that ability. We've seen it so often, that ability that EJ talked about in that game against the Devils, down 6-2, playing terrible. They come back and score four goals. I don't know that you can do that in the playoffs. The teams get better. The goaltending gets better. They're not playing the Devils in the playoffs, you know? So that is a concern for me. And I hedge if it's Pittsburgh, but Washington, I might pick Washington over Florida.
If they can come back, they have it in their heads. Like, it doesn't matter who you play against. Like, you have that confidence. And look, to me, Washington is a horrible matchup for the Capitals, right? They're not the fleetest of foot. And I think Florida would skate circles around them. You're going to take their goaltending and be like, well, I'm really concerned about Florida's goaltending. And it's Sergei Bobrovsky, who's won a couple of Vezina trophies, and Spencer Knight, who's one of the most highly touted prospects in the goalie pipeline. And you're going to say they're not as good as Washington's goaltending? Oh boy. Like, if I had to take healthy goaltending and everybody had all their healthy guys, Washington 14, 15 in a 16 team playoff field, do you don't think the Florida Panthers are going to put up goals against those two players? And my level of concern for Florida is not very high in the first round.
All right. I mean, I think that's fair. You make reasonable points. I just look at Florida and so often they've had to come back in games. They give up goals. They trade chances. They don't have a pedigree in the playoffs. Washington does. You know, Washington is not necessarily always a trade chance team. Washington's big, very big. Goaltending, yeah, of course that worries me. But it worries me on Florida's side too. You know, so there's a level of concern I have. Look, like I said, if it's Pittsburgh, I don't like the way the Penguins have played. I don't like their goaltending. I'm not a huge fan of their defense, although Letang's had a terrific season. I don't know how much I'm a fan of just their overall scoring depth, to be honest with you. Crosby's fantastic. We know that. Malkin can be great. Gensel gets a lot. Rust is good. But they haven't been great. the Smith factor hurts. I think the Jerry injury hurts. So I won't, don't think I'd pick Pittsburgh, but Washington would give me pause. And I might, that might be the one upset, you know, hey, you can't just go chalk. Right. So I would go that route because I do believe that Washington, while they're not the fleetest of foot, can forecheck against this team. They can play a heavy game against the Florida Panthers. They can grind it out against the Panthers. I don't know that the Panthers can grind it out. And we haven't seen it yet. I could be dead wrong about the Florida Panthers. They could be the team that just goes and scores six every night in the playoffs and rolls right through. But I don't think that's happening.
And look, it also changes if it's the Capitals and Ovi's not at 100%. He's dealing with a bad shoulder. He didn't play in his last game. We don't know if he's going to play tonight. It looks unlikely.
Nah, he's fine. He's going to be in for game one.
Well, Peter Laviolette said that the game he missed, if it was game one of the playoffs, he wouldn't be playing, right? And to me, that was a shocking admission. But I'll tell you the team.
Easy to say that a week in advance, by the way.
Sure. It is. And you know, I believe last week I said that the Russian machine never breaks, and then he broke.
It didn't break.
So, you know, I'm like the SI jinx.
It didn't break. He got a little crack.
He's dented.
Slight little dent. Yeah.
Dent. The team that I would be nervous about, and they're not as big a favorite, is the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Well, they're not. I don't think they're going to be favorite at all if they play Tampa Bay.
Well, they have the fourth best record in the league, right? And forget Tampa Bay. If they play Boston, I'm scared to death of them. And I've heard it for days now. Oh, we got screwed. It's not 1-8. If it was 1-8, we would have a much better matchup. What do we get for playing so hard all year? What did the Colorado Avalanche get for playing so hard all year? Right? What did the Calgary Flames get? If they draw Nashville, they're going to go through a week-long meat grinder. It is going to be a week of hell, but not the way that Daryl Sutter imagined it. Like,
right.
Nashville is going to make somebody pay.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they're going to be a 7 or 8. Dallas is going to make somebody pay, and they're going to be a 7 or 8.
Carolina. Look at Carolina, right? Yeah. Finished first in the Metropolitan Division. They're going to get, I mean, they could get Boston in the first round, you know? Yeah.
Who's tormented them.
Yeah. So who's been better than them since the All-Star break.
This whole, oh, you deserve something. You don't deserve anything. Win. If you're such a good team, you got 114 points. You're the best team in the history of Toronto hockey, Original Six. Go out and win a series. And then talk to me. Oh, and then we win that series. And then we got to play another really tough team. So does everybody else. And it's that thought process. And it's the way that permeates into everything, that quasi-entitlement, that's a killer in the playoffs. And it's killed them. And if you don't think whoever plays them is going to play off of that, like we talk about psychological warfare, like you can turn the screws on Toronto really easy. Especially as soon as things start to go bad, and everybody will help you.
Yep.
You don't think the media there will help you. The fans there will help you. They'll all help turn the heat up and make things miserable. It scares me to no end. I think Toronto's a really good team. They need some goaltending, but I think they're, you know, they clearly have the pieces offensively. You know, Riley's a really good defenseman, should probably be talked about a little bit more in the Norris, but that's psyche. Wow.
That was a good rant. It wasn't as good as your Titanic comparison earlier in the show, but that was a good rant. I'll give you that one. And I am 100% agreement with you. Like, everybody's going to play a tough team in the first round. Like, there's no easy way to get to the Stanley Cup final.
There has never been in the history of the NHL 8 teams in one division with 100 points.
Right.
So, welcome to the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, you're playing a tough team. It doesn't matter who. And here's my thought with Toronto, too.
And if you're Toronto, who do you pick? Who do you want to play that you say, we'll kill those guys?
Nobody. It's nobody. You're not going to kill anybody in the playoffs this year, in both conferences. But here's my thing with Toronto. They should be reveling in the opportunity to play the Tampa Bay Lightning if they get it. They should love that opportunity. The Lightning haven't lost a playoff round in 2 years, 8 straight rounds, right? They're the team that nobody beats now, okay? The Toronto Maple Leafs should be licking their chops and saying, you know what? Here we go. We're going big here. We're taking them out. We're taking out the 2-time defending Stanley Cup champs. We haven't won a playoff round in 18 years. Well, we're going big here, and we're going to get that done. That's erased. That's gone. You think that we can't win? We're going to go out and do that. That's the attitude that they should be having. Now, you know, like that's the way they got to look. That's the way they have to be thinking about it. Whatever happened in the regular season, recent, who cares? This is the best opportunity that the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to have to really say we have arrived.
And I think, to be fair, I think the players believe that. I think Auston Matthews believes that.
Yes, I do.
I think in that room, they're like, yeah, bring on Tampa Bay. But it's all the noise surrounding them. And if it starts poorly, oh boy, like it's just going to get toxic quick. And that's the weight of history. And that's the weight of being the center of the hockey universe. You know, we talked with EJ about Vegas and how everybody's united against them and revels in their misery. It's kind of the same in Toronto, right? If you're not a Toronto fan, everybody's kind of like, well, glad they're out. Like, mm-hmm. glad there's another heaping of misery that's just been ladled into their bowl. Because do something and then right. talk.
Yeah.
Like, accomplish yeah. something first and then have the conversation about, oh, well, this wasn't really fair and we overcame it. Like, don't start with, well, this isn't fair. What's fair in the playoffs? Is it fair that the Carolina Hurricanes played like champs all year and then their goalie got hurt in the last week of the season? Is that fair? Is it fair that UC Saros, who should be in the MVP conversation because he played in 67 regular season games, which nobody does anymore, gets hurt at the last minute of a game against Calgary that meant almost nothing? No, it's not fair. There's nothing fair in the playoffs.
I agree. That was good. Good rant there. Last thing before we get out. What about, now Tampa's not an underdog team, so that's not going to, that they don't play in this question for you, Sean, but we talked about it a little bit with EJ about underdog teams. You got one that you think can make some noise, can be the LA Kings of 2012, the Dallas Stars of 2020, the Nashville Predators of what year was it, 2017?
Well, it depends on how you're framing that question, right? Like, those were all first time teams that made
low
noise.
Seats too.
Yeah, but the Boston Bruins
Montreal
are low
last year, by the way.
The Boston Bruins are a low seed.
Right.
If they don't pass Tampa Bay, they're the 7th seed.
But I would count them as an underdog this season.
Then
I would. It's then not Tuukka Rask, you know, it's not Zdeno Chara. Yeah. It's different.
Then they're my team. Yeah. As an underdog, as a 7 or 8 seed, you're not going to find a better team than them. Part of it's a testament to the division they play in. Like, again, you want to talk about fair. Do you think the Boston Bruins think it's fair that they're at 109 points or wherever they are, 106 points, and they have to play in the wild card? Right? Like, but it, so if they're 7 or 8 and they get goaltending, they scare me, especially with the way that they can draw, right? If they get Carolina doesn't have a goalie,
mm-hmm.
right? Doesn't have their number one goalie. Who do you like in that matchup then? Right? Because goaltending is the difference in a lot of teams that they're going to play against. But even if they somehow pass Tampa Bay and they play Toronto, the goaltending's a shake again. So, and they have the history against the Toronto Maple Leafs. They've won a game in that series before they even walk into the building. So that would be my team.
Yeah, I agree with you. They are. I wanted to say Dallas. But kind of along the lines of what EJ said, you know, like, you like to believe in them, but they are very one line heavy. Their D is good. Ottinger's been good, but I don't know. We'll see, you know, and it seems like every time you want to see them step up and play big, they kind of play okay. It's not big. It's just kind of okay. Whereas I could see it from Boston. I like Coach Ekhoff. If it's Carolina, like, I'm telling you, man, this guy might have a run in him. Like, he's good. You know, he's good. He's never done it before. He's played in 3 or 4 NHL games, but, you know, so you can't like him too much. You'd prefer obviously to see Freddie Anderson there, but he's also got a lot of playoff disappointment in him mm-hmm. that he knows about. Kochekov doesn't. He's fresh. He's new. He doesn't carry any baggage into the postseason. Doesn't carry any baggage from the regular season into the postseason. So I think he could be a dangerous goalie, at least for a round for the Carolina Hurricanes. But Boston has played in so many big games And all of these, most of the guys on this team have played in big games. So they understand that. Cassidy has been a terrific coach and coached in a lot of big games. So they are, for me as well, the team that I'm looking at and saying, I don't care who they play. They are they could win a first round series. And I don't think they just win a first, like they could win a first round series in five or six games. Like that's who the type of team they are. They're 24-11-2 since the All-Star break. That's a 676 points percentage. That's fifth in the NHL since the All-Star break. Yeah. They're good, really good.
Like, and that's a recency bias that you should buy into, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, look, I guess maybe Kochetkov is Russian for Cam Ward.
Yeah.
Or Ken Dryden.
Right.
and he has that kind of run in him. But yeah, no, I really like Boston. And I think Bruce Cassidy, like, he's been above 600, maybe 650 every season that he's coached the Bruins. Like, really, really good coach, really good playoff coach, I think. You know, able to adjust things. When you look at what he's done with their lineup this year, you know, moving DeBrusk up, breaking up the perfection line, all the things that he's had to do to kind of spur them across the finish line. Like, I like the potential of what he can do in a series when he sees things start to go poorly and to be able to move things around and not be afraid to say, I have an answer and we're going to try it. And a team who's willing to embrace that and say, okay, yeah, we like you think about the perfection line, like they played together forever and they were so good. And then he goes, hey, how about we do this? And you move down and we'll put the guy who asked to be traded up on the first line. And everybody just kind of looked and said, okay, that's good for the team. We'll do it. And it worked. Like, how many teams, how many cultures are there in the NHL where that's going to happen? Where you're going to say, I'm going to completely shake this up and nobody's going to bat an eyelash and nobody's going to, you know, crawl into the corner and whisper in somebody's ear and say, can you believe this guy? Mm-hmm. What's he thinking? Like, we're the best line in hockey. We're called the perfection line. And he got the gall to break us up. No, they were like, okay, let's see if it works.
Yeah. And it has. It has. He's empowered guys too. You know, he, Jake DeBrusk, he's empowered him. So they're an interesting team. It's going to be great stuff coming up in the playoffs. Sean, by the way, I will say that once again, I was steering this right into the glacier and you pulled us right back to safety.
It's an iceberg, Dan.
Iceberg, glacier, whatever. You know what I meant.
An iceberg is in the water, a glacier is in land.
Yes, fine. Iceberg. I was steering us right into the iceberg. Violins were playing.
But before you sign off and to step away from being funny and owning you for a minute, before we go and before the playoffs start, I just want to say to our guest who's been on at least once, if not twice, Trip Tracy, I hope he's doing well. You know, he's going to be away from the Canes for a little while and dealing with some issues, but we're all pulling for him. One of the best guys in hockey. And, you know, I hope everything works out and we see him soon in the playoffs.
I'm glad you said that because I 100% agree with you, Trip. We hope you get well or doing well. And we hope to see you back at the rink soon enough. We are leaving the podcast now, but At the Rink will be back next week as the playoffs are going on. Follow us on Twitter at The Rink, at DRosenNHL, at @SRourke_NHL. Go back, listen to our previous podcasts, rate us, review us, and enjoy the hockey.